Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sport Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in science while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Today's topic is building bridges through bioengineering. My name is Agnes.
This is Sarah.
And we are here to tell you all about it.
Welcome to our podcast. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Irem, a PhD student from the Pharmaceutical Science Department, and she focuses on bioengineering platforms for studying cell migration. Thank you for joining us, Irem.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is Sarah.
This is Agnes. Hi, Irem. I just wanted to ask you something about, can you give us a short overview about your research? What exactly are you doing and with what kind of cells do you work?
Okay, yeah, sure. So my research actually focuses on developing a bioengineered platform for studying cell migration, and particularly in the context of cancer metastasis. Because traditional cell culture methods typically involve growing cells in a monolayer flats like petri dishes or flasks, which doesn't fully represent the complexity of the living tissues. And for that, we are actually using 3D cell culture, which 3D cell culture, on the other hand, involves growing cells in three-dimensional environment, which often using scaffolds or matrices to mimic this whole functional of the tissues more accurately. And in our research, we are creating this 3D cell culture using silk sponge scaffolds, which actually there basically looks like basic kitchen sponges, but of course it's more like cell culture based. And this approach allows for better recapitulating of the in vivo and micro environment, including cell-cell and cell-matrix interactions, which are crucial for studying processes like cell migration and invasion. So we want to create a 3D dynamic self-designed platform for monitoring cell migration, specifically in cancer cells.
So how long does it take to create such a 3D cell culture silk sponge?
Well, the silk sponge itself takes like 2 weeks in total, because we are starting from the cocoons. And you need to peel them, and there are some chemical steps in between. Mm-hmm. But more or less in 2 weeks, we will have actually ready to use silk sponges, and then we can just seed the cells on top of them.
Okay, but wait a second. Why do you actually want to create the system? Like, the system that we have currently is not enough?
Well, actually, that's a really good question. So as I mentioned before, 2D cell culture systems is like, there's like widely used, yes, but they have some limitations currently mimicking the complexity of living tissues. And these systems often fail to this like important aspects of cell behavior. And that's why sometimes we have some research in vitro, and then when we want to do it in vivo, we cannot really have the results that we want to expect. And for example, you have some kind of chemical and you believe that this chemical is suppressing the cell migration, and then you have really nice results on 2D. And then afterwards, mostly, especially if you have really nice publications, you will just go with the animal research. And sometimes you cannot really see the results that you have in 2D. And then you sacrifice lots of animals. So actually we want to create a step in between that, like, okay, if you have really nice results on 2D, that's good. And afterwards, you want to go with the animals, but just we want to provide a platform in between. Mm-hmm. Then, like, try in this, and then you again have a nice result, just then go with the animals. And then just other steps for drug development.
So, sorry for interrupting. So you are thinking about doing an in-between, a bridge in between in vitro and in vivo.
Yes, exactly. I mean, as you ask, there are like, of course, some methods. There are some 3D approaches for understanding the cancer invasion and cell movement. Some of the labs are using matrigel, for example. It's a special chemical protein, which... like it contains lots of mixtures, and it's really actually, it's a perfect scaffold, I would say. Not scaffold, but perfect material, yes, But one of the problems is it's really expensive. Another problem is also it's animal-based, and there are some batch-to-batch differences. So even if you want to repeat the experiment, you have some unexpected results. And you really need to be super super good with the cell culture and everything to create those experiments. So we want to actually also address this problem. We want to create an inexpensive, less time-consuming, and more like significant required, like more like don't require significant expertise tool that gives some results for us. And yeah, basically.
This sounds really, really promising. So I wonder, how is your system better or easier to use? And what are other advantages of your system?
So we actually, other thing that we added to our system is, so as you all know, we have like heart, and then it's all the time pumping the blood in our systems, actually. And this is also something that cells actually moving with those, also the other parts of the other tissues and cancer cells also moving with this. So that's why we added control flow to simulate this movement as well. And we are providing this flow with HPLC pump, and we are just mimicking the psychological flow of nutrients and oxygens in vivo. And this step actually, I would say, make it our system is better. And if you would ask, like, what is the easy to use, actually, we are using fluorescent label cells. So you don't have to fix it or taking photo all the time of the system. You can just basically take the tool and put in some kind of fluorescent microscope, and you can see the movements with the fluorescent label. So that's why it's, I would say, easy to use, because for the other systems, you need to either take photo in specific time points, or you need to fix your cells, or like lots of in-between steps. But for us, it's just like take your tool, put in the microscope and see.
Okay, that sounds actually really easy to use and very promising. Congratulations. And actually, another question that I have is, what were other significant findings of your study regarding the cell migration?
Well, we are actually, I'm in my second year, and most of the time is mostly trying to optimize the system with lots of failures and some success steps in between. But for the moment, actually, we optimize the cell seeding concentration, like how many cells can we seed, and what is the fluorescent intensity of those cells, which cell number we actually have best fluorescent signal. And also we kind of optimize the flow rate, because here we need to think about lots of steps, actually, like diameter of the pump, diameter of the tubings and diameter of the silk and everything. But we kind of optimize this step as well. And we are using two different chemicals, anti-microstatic chemicals, which they're not really actually using in the pharmaceutical sciences right now. But we actually optimize those chemicals on 2D steps and 3D steps. And in that, we want to do the same chemical in our system, and then like, yeah, okay, you have this and you have this result, and we also had the same result or better result. So we are in middle, I would say, maybe a bit far from the middle, but we have really promising results.
Yeah, that sounds really, really interesting. So, and what are actually the next steps in your research following the validation of your bioengineered platform?
Well, after all of those optimization steps, we want to use this. I mean, it's really far future, I would say, but we want to use this system afterwards, maybe with iPSC cells or like patient-derived cells, because now we are working with cell lines. And after the optimizing system with the cell lines, we could actually implement the same system for really specific drug screening or personalized medicine tools as well. This is what I believe, but yeah, also let's see.
Thank you, Irem. And regarding the life part of this podcast, what are some specific challenges or limitations that you've encountered with developing this technology?
During these 2 years, I had like crying moments definitely in the lab, especially if you're working in the weekend. I mean, that happened a couple of times to me. I accidentally spilled my samples, and then, I mean, you're in the lab since like 7 in the morning, and then suddenly in the afternoon you spilled all of your samples, and then
be so frustrating.
It was really horrible, and I was like, I mean, you just like, I was just like, okay, it's so stupid, and like, because of anger, of course, those things, you just like, but I had some crying sessions, definitely, but in general, I would say I'm really lucky with my PI and my, I would say, co-workers, because in those moments we were always like in touch and talking to each other, and then they're really supportive. But outside of the lab, I would say, well, interestingly, since I moved to Vienna, because I moved to Vienna for my PhD, and I was a smoker before, but then afterwards I quit smoking and I start biking.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you. And start like walking a lot, because Vienna is actually providing lots of nice green areas.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And whenever I feel frustrated or like, I don't know, overwhelmed, I'm just like either biking without thinking anything or just walking. This really helped me a lot.
So basically physical activity is giving you a proper work-life balance, right?
Definitely. And I would say healthy friendship environment. But like healthy means like sometimes I'm just calling my friends and just like complaining, even though they don't understand what I'm doing. I'm just like complaining a lot. And just like, this happened, that happened. And then they're just like,
But having a good support system helps, like people that you have around. Definitely helps.
Even they just like cannot maybe really empathize it, because they are in working different areas. Even it's like, yeah, sure, it's enough.
It happens. Just get up and continue. Yes. Sometimes we have to do that.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, Irim, what kind of takeaway messages do you have for our listeners about your research?
I would say, even though sometimes the projects or PhD look super overwhelming, because I actually applied this just a project and it looks a bit like interesting, intense, but yes. When you start doing it, you will just doing with the rhythm. Because first 1.5 years, I was really struggling, like, what I am doing? What is going to happen afterwards? I mean, are all of those just waste of plastics and just like materials?
Sorry, that sounds so funny.
Yeah, but...
But it's actually true. More than that, yes, right?
But I mean... If you just hang on 1.5 years, in the end, it makes sense. In the end, everything makes sense. And just like, I would just suggest if like listeners thinking about doing PhDs or something like that, just start and then you will figure that out. Hopefully with the nice PI and co-workers.
Thank you so much, Irim, for sharing your insight and expertise with us today. It has been really a pleasure having you in our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was also a pleasure for me to discuss my research with you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Sarah
and Agnes. Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and experts' contributions on how to navigate the career path of a young scientist.
Next episode will be about plant-based diet with Katharina from the Nutritional Sciences Department.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sport Sciences.
Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening. See you next time.